I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're broadcasting live from WNIN in Evansville, Indiana, where we're going to explore a fascinating story about a Hoosier's experience in World War I. My guests are author Nancy Hastings, historian Stan Schmidt, and WNIN's own Steve Berger. We're not able to take phone calls today, but we hope you'll enjoy the conversation and join it by emailing us at nolimits@wfyi.org, finding us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or tracking us down on Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking today about a fascinating story about a Hoosier's experience in World War I. We are broadcasting live from lovely WNIN in beautiful Evansville, Indiana, where this program is now going to be aired on a regular basis. If you want to join the conversation, you're going to have to do it through modern means. The phones are not a good option today, so we're going to ask you to join the conversation by sending us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, finding us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or tracking us down on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Nancy Hastings. She is the author of A Tragedy of the Great War, historian Stan Schmidt, and WNIN's own Steve Berger. Welcome, all of you, to the program.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Actually, Steve, it feels a little weird for me to be saying welcome to you since I'm operating out of your shop. But anyway, it's good. And before we start the discussion, there's a somber note that I need to address. Former Indianapolis Star columnist Matt Tully died last night. Those of you who have been longtime listeners with this program know that Matt has been a guest on the show several times. He was a fine journalist and an even better human being, and our thoughts and condolences go out to his wife, his son, and to all of his many friends and family members. So, Steve, we're actually here because pretty big event coming up right after the broadcast of this show, the premiere of Chester and Gertrude at War. Could you tell us a little bit about the program?
Yeah, it is the premiere of the audio documentary of Chester and Gertrude at War. We also did a video documentary that will air later. But Chester and Gertrude at War has really been 10 years in the making. I first started talking with Nancy about this 10 years ago. We're introduced by one of the local librarians, Evelyn Walker, when Nancy had a display at the library about Chester Schultz. Mm-hmm. And we started doing that story, and it turned out to be an amazing story, as I hope we'll get into here. But we finally got closure this year, this past July, when Chester was finally recognized, as he should be, on a monument in France. And we can talk a little bit about that. But that's all in the documentary. We went to France with Nancy and her sister, Ann Stevenson, in July. And we were there when the plaque was put on that monument. And it turned out that it was a historic moment for the U.S. Army's 1st Infantry Division, because no one had ever asked them to add a name to a monument before.
So, Nancy, that was kind of your cue here.
Okay.
To talk about this. Probably ought to tell us a little bit about who Chester and Gertrude are.
Okay.
Or were. And a little bit about your connection with them.
All right. Chester and Gertrude is really a story that I've known from my childhood. My dad was Chester Schultz Veneta, and he was named for his uncle, who had been killed in World War I, and that's the story I'd always heard. He was killed 4 days before the end of the war, but it was 4 months before his family found out what happened to him. So it was always kind of a tragic tale that they talked about. And that's pretty much all I knew until shortly after my mother passed away. I was looking through some things in my dad's closet and found a box of letters and was fascinated by the story that they told of Chester writing home with all of his experiences as he was going through training and over in France, and his mother, Gertrude, writing back to him the things that were going on here in Evansville and in her experience, and then also the war mother's connection there, mm-hmm. That she was responsible for some of that effort here in Evansville. So it was just a really fascinating, just a childhood story that grew and grew on me and became an important part of my life, really.
When did you decide that there was a book there? Because you have written a book,
yes. Well, initially I transcribed all the letters and got mm-hmm. them in chronological order just for my family. And I made a home very mm-hmm. Basic book that I sent out to my siblings and my cousins and a little farther afield to family members of Chester. Of course, he was my great uncle. I don't think I said that, but mm-hmm. So I sent that out. And that's the book then that attracted Evelyn Walker, who then sent it to Steve Berger. And he's the one that kind of made me realize that there's some people that might have interest in it other than family members. To me, it was a personal family story. And he kind of helped me to realize that it was a universal story that everybody could enjoy and learn from.
Stan, that's part of the power, really, of the story, is that it personalizes. World War I is such, an epic world event. The tales of how many men died in just a matter of minutes at some of the battles almost boggle the imagination. This brings it back down to the human level, though, and makes you realize what it was like just to be a guy from Indiana who was in the middle of that.
Yeah, and for many people in Indiana had not traveled anywhere outside of the area. That was one of the things. So many of these men from Hoosiers went to Europe and came back totally different, in the way they looked at things there. I think it got rid of some of the local, the insular, outlook on life there, kind of the what are you going to do when you get back on the farm after you've been to Gay Prairie kind of mm-hmm. thing.
Yeah. Steve, what, there are a lot of stories, and there were a fair number of people from Evansville who had served in wars. What was it about this particular story that you thought, oh, okay, I can translate that into sound and film and make it a compelling experience?
Well, it was the complete collection of letters, first of all, yeah. An unusually complete collection of letters, back and forth between Chester and his mother, and also family members, but mainly his mother. So you see that a mother's love, you see a son's devotion. This family really cared about each other. So just that whole story of the family involvement in it, and they were closely involved, every one of them, I think is what really, really got to me. And then also the fact, it's a little known fact, historically important for us here in Evansville, is that Gertrude Schultz founded the War Mothers of America, or she was instrumental mm-hmm. in founding that national women's organization, which, if the book about Evansville is accurate, over or around 2 million women were interested in that movement by the end of the war. So it was a very important time in our history, and very little known about it locally. So that's really what attracted me to it.
Why? And I'll toss this out to anyone who wants it. What is it? Because that sounds like a pretty big deal to me, but you're right. Until I listen to, Alpha, acknowledge here that I have listened to the documentary and all of this. I've gotten a sneak preview of it. That sounds like a pretty big deal, and yet it's not something I knew before I heard this. Why was that fact lost, Nancy?
I think it's because World War I history is somewhat lost. World War II came along somewhat mm-hmm. quickly afterwards, and people don't know much about World War I. I was reading a book, and one of the things they said was you can name important battles in the Civil War. You can name important battles in World War II, but very few people can name things that happened in World War I, and I think it's just kind of that history got covered over. We weren't in there too long. It was just a few, a year and a few months of participation, but I think it's just kind of faded away with the other things that happened afterwards.
Stan, how much of that is a product of the fact that, you know, when we came out of World War II, we emerged really for a while as the world's only superpower, and there was kind of a high. There was a profound sense of disillusionment after World War I across the country, and in the classic Lost Generation, you know, I think it's Fitzgerald, he wrote that he emerged from the war feeling that all gods were dead and that they were all members of a lost generation.
World War I, you came out of U.S. participation. Partly, I guess it was the return to normalcy that instead of this global outlook, America turned inward again. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think a lot of that people forgot about then. You know, they're back to now making money, back to work, and they weren't looking at that overseas, that the great campaign against the Kaiser anymore.
What did, Nancy, when you were looking at this, and I'm going to ask Steve the same question, what was the biggest revelation that you saw from doing the research? What opened your eyes the most and let you feel like you were stepping into another world, or at least stepping into their world?
Probably for that was just the tone of the letters, just that, you know, it's like you're there, and it's just the way that people were living at that time that you don't really think about, you know, that what they're interested in, they're putting in their letters. And so it's just kind of maybe the tone of that back and forth, and just the love that you feel between the family members and how they were all so connected and interested. One of my favorite letters is a group letter there at a family gathering, and they all write a little piece to Chester. And it's kind of like, you know, when we pass the phone around now, if you're at a family gathering and somebody's not there. So kind of just that interconnectedness of the people.
Steve, same question.
I'm sorry.
Well, basically, what was the biggest revelation for you when you were looking at this, doing the reporting on it?
A couple of things, because you're right, we don't think a lot about World War One,
mm-hmm.
And it's such an important part of our history, but it just got glossed over. But also, the universal nature of this story, as Nancy just mentioned, the family's love for each other. These guys really cared about each other, and it was just such a tragic thing to happen that this close family tie was severed, and they couldn't get any information until 4 months later. That had to be a horrible time for the mother, Gertrude Schultz.
Yeah, and that's the other part of disappearing into that world is, you know, now we think if someone sends us a text and we don't, you know, or whatever, and we don't respond immediately that there's something wrong. But in those days, you know, communication was much more difficult.
That's right. The letters took a long time to get there, and actually Chester never received the letters that we have back. All the ones that we have, of course, were returned to Gertrude. So, you know, they didn't have the communication that we do today, where you just instantly know what's going on. And that four-month period was really horrific because of the conflicting reports they'd get. People would come back and they'd say, well, he's wounded. And then they'd come back and say, no, he's dead. And then they would just really have a lot of stress over that, a lot of desperation to find out what actually happened.
Steve.
Yes, and it played out in the public spotlight, and that comes out in the documentary that we're airing later today, that because she was the first president of the War Mothers of America, whenever there was a rumor that went around or whenever there was somebody came back or sent a letter, it was in the newspaper that this misinformation, it turned out to be a tremendous amount of misinformation, including from official sources like the congressman, George Denton, sent them a note and said, I expect him to come back any day. It was horrible. It was a horrible time for her.
Well, and that whole, I mean, that was also an incredibly chaotic war, right, Stan?
Yeah, at the end there, movements of armies there, the German army was in rapid retreat, and nobody knew where anybody was, really.
Well, and that's a theme in a lot of the war literature, like if you read or reread Hemingway's A Farewell to Arms, I mean, it's impossible to think that there was any organization at all there, correct?
Yes, and that's what I say there. What had begun at the beginning is a short American offensive against the Germans. I mean, it just, the German army just went into mass retreat. So, I mean, there was movement everywhere, and keeping track of anybody was very difficult at that point.
If you're just joining us, we are broadcasting today from WNIN in Evansville, Indiana. We're doing No Limits, and we're focusing on a story about a Hoosier's experience in World War I, really a Hoosier family's experience in World War I, that is going to be the subject of an audio documentary that's going to air right after this program on WNIN. We hope it'll make it around the state, too. If you want to join the conversation, we can't take calls today, but we invite you to send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are author Nancy Hastings, historian Stan Schmidt, and WNIN's own Steve Berger. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today from WNIN in lovely Evansville, Indiana. We're talking about a Hoosier family's experience in World War I. My guests are author Nancy Hastings. She is the author of A Tragedy of the Great War, historian Stan Schmidt, and WNIN's own Steve Berger. Right after this program, you're going to be able to hear on WNIN Chester and Gertrude at War, an audio documentary. Because we're in Evansville, we're not able to take calls today, but we hope you will join the conversation by sending us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, finding us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or tracking us down on Twitter at WFYI. So, Nancy, I want you to talk a little bit about Chester and who he was, other than the circumstances of his death, what kind of guy he was, what your research showed us.
Well, I don't know, of course, personally, of course, because he died so long ago, and my family, of course, is all gone since I started having an interest in this. My grandmother would have been able to tell me personal experience of him, but I didn't know enough as a child to ask her.
What did you glean out of the letters, though?
But from the letters, I think he was just a really good guy. The soldiers that sent back notices after he died said, you know, he was just a jolly good fella. He was my best friend. He was just a wonderful guy. And the other insight we have into his personality is before he left for the war, one of his teachers came, then had him in grade school, and she said she called him her little Mr. Sunshine. So she was very complimentary about how happy and what a nice kid he was. So I think he was just a very personable, friendly person. I like to liken him a lot to my dad, who was named for him. I mean, because that was kind of his personality as well. So in my mind's eye, that's who I see when I think of Chester Schultz.
And Steve, how did you go about for the audio documentary? What were the challenges in trying to bring that period and his story to life? Because it's a century old, and you really only have letters. So
exactly. What we did was we had a couple of folks voice the letters. So one, A.J. Casey, was the voice of Chester, and Marta Briscoe was the voice of Gertrude Schultz, and then the other letters that we used or other communications were voiced by other people so that we could bring that to life. And then by going to France, we were able to follow in 2018 and juxtapose the letters being read and other information being read with what was actually happening as we traced his steps to really make that come to life.
Tell me about the trip to France. I mean, what was that? First, I'll go with Steve on that, but then I want to hear the family experience too, what it was like. Steve?
Well, this, because we had followed this for so long, we decided to go all in and make the trip to France. I went with Nancy and her sister Anne, and we also took filmmaker Brick Briscoe with us to capture the video portion of it. It just that investment of time and resources to do that because the story was so important. Historically, for Evansville, it was really important that this story get told because we just didn't know about it. It wasn't common knowledge.
When you say it was really important for Evansville, what made it so important for the community? Because I'm sure that there were other people from Evansville who fought in World War I.
And I'm sure Stan can weigh in on this as well. But if you, on every patriotic holiday, we always talk about James Bethel Gresham, who was one of the first U.S. casualties in World War I, and that's all we hear. What we really wanted to do was to give the Evansville an option and say, there is a really important story from the end of that war, and we don't know anything about it for the most part.
Stan, I think that was your cue.
Well, there were other people there, and it's one of those things. At the end of the war, they published a book here, Men of Honor, and Chester Schultz is in there, and it tells a brief story of him. But there's other people, and it is. It's the James Bethel Gresham story is the one we take out of most things local like that. You have the two Funkhauser brothers. You have other people like that, you know, the families that lost people that really don't get mentioned or you don't hear about.
What was it about Chester's story? Was it the confusion really surrounding his death that kind of obscured interest? I see Nancy nodding over here, but I'm going to give Stan the first crack at this.
Okay. Well, you had that at the end of the war, the long wait to find out what happened to him. But then, and it was also the tragedy, you know, dying 4 days before the war ends there, that, you know, if he had been just a little bit different place or something, he would have come home.
And that's one of the hard things. I suspect that was one of the hard things for the family, too, is no one wants to be the last person to die in a war.
Yes, I think that was in some of my grandmother's letters, just kind of her thoughts, that it was just like 4 days just would have made such a difference that it's so sad. And also, when you think about it, they knew the war was going to end before November 11th, but they waited for that specific 11-11 at 11 o'clock to end it. And if they had gone ahead and ended it a little earlier, you know, he might have survived.
What was it like going to France?
It was just an amazing trip. It was I had gone once before in 2014, and that's when I realized that his name was left off of the monument. But this time we were going to see that plaque on the monument. And unfortunately, as we were ready to leave, the plaque had not made it there yet onto the monument. They had the plaque, but it wasn't installed. So they had given me a second one we took along just in case that we might have to use that as a prop to film. But it was amazing to trace his steps, and we had real accurate maps, and especially an accurate map of where he was buried. And they pretty much buried them right where they fell in the battle, so we knew pretty much where he was killed. And to find that spot and to look and see, it was just very moving to be at that spot. And I left a little bouquet of flowers there, and just that was very special. But probably the most amazing part was when we installed that plaque. Since it wasn't installed, it worked out that we got to actually do the installation work or be there when it was installed. I got to help turn the last screws on the plaque to get it on the monument, and that was just amazing.
Talk with me a little bit about, you know, the way it resonated for you, the experience of going over there the first time as a storyteller when you're still trying to kind of figure out the nature of the story, and then also as a family member uncovering something that is a part of your family lore. As you said at the top of the show, this is something for as long as you could remember people talked about.
Right. The first time was pretty much just curiosity. I had done the basic book for my family, and I just thought, you know, I wanted to be there at that time of year to visit. I had a friend in Germany, and we visited, and she and her husband are the ones that went to France with me, and we did this kind of discovery. But I didn't really know that much. I hadn't done nearly the research that I put into it afterwards. I lucked into some research right before I got there that helped us to somewhat know where he was. And we were pretty close, but the major find at that point was the find that he wasn't on the plaque. And so we came home and worked and finally got that permission to put his name on the plaque. So going back was just really exciting because we knew so much more the actual path he was and where he was killed. And it was just a great kind of closure of the story to kind of really finalize it.
Did it resonate with other members of your family?
I think I'm the one that most
carries
the torch. My sister is very much in it as well. But yeah, it's like in any family, there's different levels of interest to it. But you know, and they're proud that this is their great uncle as well. But yeah, it's probably most important to me. But yes, there's a lot of interest with them too.
If you are just joining us, we are broadcasting today from WNIN in Evansville, Indiana, and we're telling the story of a Hoosier's experience in World War One, really a Hoosier family's experience in World War One. Because we are in Evansville, we're not able to take phone calls today, but we invite you to join the conversation, perhaps talk about your ancestors who served in what was called the Great War at the time. You can do that by sending us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. So, Steve, in terms of the audio documentary, what themes were you trying to hit in doing the storytelling here?
Well, what actually ended up in the documentary are far fewer than we started.
I know. It's
with,
amazing how much stuff has.
As you can tell, there are several storylines that work out really well with this story. We ended up with the letters and just the common communication of the family with each other, the pride that Chester Schultz had in serving as a his country and the patriotism that he expressed in those letters, and then the letters back from his mother, and that was throughout the whole time, and then Gertrude Schultz's participation, the War Mothers of America. We have a section on that in the convention because we have some of her opening speech, for example, that we were able to have voiced. And things like that, but also then her the triumph of that, but then the tragedy of what immediately followed. She sent him a letter within an hour and a half of learning that the armistice had been signed. The first thing she did almost was send out the letter to Chester because she noted the time, and that letter was he'd already been dead for 4 days, and that's where it started. That's she called that her term was. The suspense and sorrow of that the family's ordeal began at that time, and it was horrific, as I mentioned earlier, for her and for the family.
Stan, talk to me a little bit about the impact on Evansville and this part of the state being the center. I mean, particularly in those days when the country population of the United States was roughly a third of what it is today. A century ago, to have an organization that had 2 million people in it, and really its center of activities is here in Evansville. Was there a huge impact on the life of this community?
It was something that made the city a more national outlook, I believe. You had people from other places looking to Evansville, Indiana, this relatively large city on the Ohio River at the time. But it was just a local regional outlook there for most things. What happened there when the War Mothers were founded? Then their national headquarters ended up in Evansville. You had certain people from Evansville were always had more or less special status within the organization. So it was one of those things where this is an organization really cross country. People from Massachusetts, Maryland, out to Utah, early on in the formation of the War Mothers, when they had their first convention in September 1918, it brought people in from all over the country, and that brought, this special attention to Evansville.
There's a saying that that the past is another country, that it's something we have to discover. One of the things I found special about this story was its intimacy, the fact that you get the family dynamics and all of that. So it lets you travel into that other country in a way that perhaps more conventional histories might not. What is it? I'm going to ask all three of you this. I'm going to start with Stan, but we'll go around the horn. What is it in learning more about this story that I'm trying to think how I want to frame this question. What can we grasp about that time that would otherwise elude us now? What does having Chester and Gertrude be our guides into that other country? What can they teach us about that we may have forgotten along the way? I'll start with Stan.
I think part of it would be just the way, not just Evansville, but the way Indiana, the way America's changed since then. I mean, I think this whole story takes you back to really a different time, more of the age of innocence, patriotism. Chester and the men from here and around the state going to France, it was this great crusade against tyranny. I mean, that's the way they looked at it there. It wasn't that, you know, okay, I'm leaving my job. I mean, it goes back almost to that Civil War, you know, where they marched off there. And, I mean, this was something for their country, for their families, something that, you know, was very important to them.
Nancy.
I think it shows you pretty much that nothing has changed as far as family dynamics. You know, I mean, we love each other. We're worried about our family. And even though this was a war 100 years ago, it's still played out today in families where someone goes off to service and to war, that it's the same old tale, that the people at home are worried and how it affects them when something happens to somebody that's given their life in service.
Steve.
Well, I think to expand a little bit on that, the cost of war, I didn't start out to tell that story, but we ended up having that included because this young man who was an accountant at the Hercules Buggy Company here in Evansville, he was a member of the church choir, he was engaged to be married, went off to war to serve his country. He felt very patriotic about that, and the dynamics of World War I that are fairly well known, that the American generals were not ready for the mechanization that the German army had, the machine guns, the tanks, and the artillery that they had, and the only way they had to address that was to throw bodies at it, and that's what happened. And then the horrible cost afterwards, what happened to this young man when he died on that hillside outside Sedan.
And Stan, I'd like you to amplify a little bit of what Steve was saying. We've alluded to it in this conversation, but what's forgotten is just what a bloodbath that war was.
It was, and you have battles there where, you know, thousands of people in a day, and the rest of Europe had been going through this for 3.5 years. I mean, the Americans were the newcomers. And like he said, American generals, and I guess it was partly, you had these eager young men, you had large numbers. I mean, the French and British army had been almost bled to death. And here are all these, you know, thousands going toward millions of American soldiers getting there. And the American generals like that, they just pushed them on. You know, when you ran into resistance, it wasn't figure out how to go around. It was you put more men in and you just continue to push.
Well, and it, you know, the cliche about that war is that it was fought once they settled into the trenches. You'd fight and expend tens of thousands of casualties to gain 10 yards or something like that. And it, correct me, I have not read as much recently as much World War I history as I should, but like the Battle of the Somme, I think, isn't that where the had tens of thousands of casualties within the space of an hour, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, you were going up against machine guns and artillery trying to cross, you know, between barbed wire. And, I mean, it's the kind where people never even got out of the trenches, there. Some of the lucky people, the ones that were shot immediately and fell back into the trench, they survived. There.
If you are just joining us, we are broadcasting live today from WNIN in lovely Evansville, Indiana. We're talking about the story of Chester Schultz and his mother, Gertrude. It's going to be the subject of a WNIN audio documentary and video documentary called Chester and Gertrude at War. My guests today are author Nancy Hastings, who has written the book A Tragedy of the Great War about Chester and Gertrude, historian Stan Schmidt, and WNIN's own Steve Berger. If you want to join the conversation, we can't take calls, but we are taking emails at nolimits@wfyi.org, Facebook messages at nolimitswfyi, or you can reach out to us via Twitter at WFYI. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're broadcasting today from WNIN in Evansville, Indiana. We're talking about Chester and Gertrude Schultz, who are the subjects of an audio documentary and soon to be a video documentary airing here on WNIN. My guests are Nancy Hasting and historian Stan Schmidt, and WNIN's own Steve Berger. So, Steve, I'm gonna take it back with you here. Tell me about the differences between the audio documentary and the video documentary.
Oh, great question. In the audio documentary, I really centered on more on Chester's the actual journey when we trace the steps. A large part of it ended up being the what we did in France in 2018, and really putting the listener there and putting what happened, what we experienced, and what we saw in put it together with the letters and the information that we had from 1918. For example, in one scene, Nancy and I are at the cemetery at Chevauche, which is where Chester's platoon gathered for a moment before they went to attack the German machine gun. And Nancy and I are looking up this bare hill at where the machine gun would have been, and I asked her, they had to cross that open field to get to that machine gun. And she said that I'm not sure I could have done it because there is no cover now, and there was no cover in 1918. They were ordered to attack that machine gun across an open field.
Stan, can you talk a little bit about the mindset? Because there is a part when we look back at this, and I mean, now we have a conflict in which, 25 people are killed, and we consider that a bloodbath. There would be battles in World War One where there would be 25-30% casualties, which is just at a rate that is astonishing today. What drove those guys to march forward knowing there was a real good chance they wouldn't be coming back?
I think part of it you get down to, it was the people that were with you there. When you were fighting, you're not thinking about America, you're not thinking about that. It's your company, it's your platoon, the guys that you've been with. And those are the ones that you're caring about there. If you don't go, you know something's going to happen to the rest of them. So it's one of those, the familiarity between the men. And then I guess, even to a slight degree there, you don't want to be seeming like you're the coward then too. So, I mean, that you've got that encouragement also. But yeah, the thing too, you didn't question orders. Something there, people in more recent times there, whether it's a illegal type order in Vietnam to kill someone, a village, or different things, the code kind of thing that you look at. Back then, when they told you to do something, you did it, and that was all there was.
Take me inside the life too, in the trenches. I mean, that was part of what deglamorized that war, is when some of the veterans came back and talked about what it was like to exist in those circumstances.
Well, and see, when Chester Schultz got there, he wasn't that long before he went straight to the line. So a lot of these, toward really the very end of World War One, with the American offensives like that, these guys hadn't been stuck in the trenches for long, mm-hmm. Long amounts of time. They hadn't really undergone that trench warfare where, you're living down underground in tunnels and the mud and everything else. They're feeding these people off the boats from England and, into Le Havre, France, where Chester came in, up to the front line, sorting you out, and you're going right into battle then. So a lot of them didn't experience that trench warfare that people did, earlier in the war.
Nancy, why was it as important to you as it was to tell Chester's story? I mean, to bring really his tale to some sort of resolution.
Well, I think I felt bad that he had given his life for his country, and nobody knew that. He had fallen off of all the books that I've come across from the 1st Division, which he was a part of. He wasn't listed in the casualties because of this confusion over his death. There was only one book, Story of the 28th Infantry, that has him listed in the back. The rest of them don't. And then he was left off the monument. And just all of that confusion and all of that where he didn't really get recognition, you know, that he should have for that. I think that kind of spurred me on to give it some closure there, that he finally gets to be on that monument with the people he gave his life with.
I want to stay with you for a second, Nancy, and ask about the impact on your family and Gertrude and the others of you know, the sort of confused circumstances of Chester's death. Whether there were any parallels with what was going on in the nation at the time. I mean, Woodrow Wilson famously said we were going into the war to make the world safe for democracy, and then after the war there were people who were, you know, who said that we'd gone into the war to make the world safe for hypocrisy, because there was a real sense of disillusionment about the war aims, not necessarily from the United States' perspective, but just for all the reasons that war was fought by all of the players. Did that filter down in your family at all?
I don't think so much a disillusionment with it. I think it was just a very sorrowful moment, my grandmother, great-grandmother, really never recovered from it, and my grandmother would cry repeating the story, I mean, repeating the poem in Flanders Fields, The Poppies Blow. It would send just tears down her face. So I think it was just more of a tragedy that resonated with them. Even when World War II came along, the other Chester's brother, Clarence, had been in the Navy and survived World War I. So when my dad needed to get into the services in World War II, they made sure he went into the Navy. It was kind of, you know, just kind of those sort of things that kept in the family.
If you're just joining us, we're broadcasting live from WNIN in Evansville. Today, we're talking about the story of Chester and Gertrude Schultz. It's a World War I story, a Hoosier World War I story. We're not able to take calls today, but if you want to join the conversation, you can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI, track us down on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what a listener named John has done and send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. John writes, for your listeners that are interested in the history of World War I, there's an excellent podcast series, Dan Carlin's Hardcore History, Blueprint for Armageddon. If there are people, Stan, who have interest in the broader subject of World War I, what are some other sources they might consult that you would suggest?
There's a number of authors, because being the 100th anniversary of World War I, there's been quite a few books coming out lately, and it's from the detailed military to the political, the aftermath, like you said, the kind of disillusionment after the war. There's kind of a new field of thought that really the war did not end on that November 11th, 1918, that it continued on into like roughly 1923, Eastern Europe down into the Middle East. You get, you know, the military actually continued.
There's long been a school of thought that the war, really, that World War II was simply the second act.
Yeah, and it was the continued on in through there. But, I mean, actually, you know, the only thing that happened on November 11th was the armistice in the West, and that stopped the fighting there. But it continued on after that, other places there. And you know, you go through Eastern Europe, into the Middle East, even into Asia, there are things that came out of the aftermath of World War I, not only into World War II, but into the current time there, things that set things into motion.
Steve, what sources did you consult, other than obviously you did the primary research on, mm-hmm. on Chester and Gertrude's letters and their correspondence?
I reviewed some of the books, especially about General Pershing and how the war was conducted. Also reviewed some of the documents, the 1st Division documents, the maps and things like that. And we found, or were given, an account that was written by a lieutenant named Maury Maverick of going up against German machine guns. And actually, Lieutenant Maverick survived the war and became a congressman in Texas.
From Texas, yeah.
Yeah,
it's how we get the name Maverick, actually, from politicians now.
It is.
Yeah.
That's in the documentary, his account of going up against the German machine guns, because we use that to talk about what Chester was facing.
So what are all the ways that people who are curious have been listening to this program, if they want to hear the audio documentary, how do they go about doing that other than obviously listening to WNIN if they are here? But is it going to be online?
It already is. I just posted it this morning. So news.wnin.org, the tabs, special projects across the top, Chester Schultz is one of those. So all of our coverage over the past 10 years is on there.
And what about the video documentary? Are there plans
that's going to premiere next Thursday, and it will be on WNIN television later in November. I don't have the exact date.
And the premiere is here in Evansville?
In our theater.
Okay.
At the station.
Is it an invitation-only event, or can people contact the station and say, I would like to see this?
The second night, which is Friday the 9th of November, is open to the public, and you can go to WNIN.org and get tickets.
And is there a cost for the tickets? Or are they free?
There is $10.
$10 for the tickets. So I want to ask, I mean, this is obviously a significant undertaking to tell this story. What was the hardest part? I'll stay with Steve, but then I want to go to Nancy. The hardest part of getting the story right, of feeling that you were being true to the material.
Wow, that's a great question, because it was very important that we were true to the material and true to Nancy's story of her family, but also to the experience of Evansville, and to the experience of Vandenberg County in World War I, and to the experience of every soldier in World War I. Chester's story is really the microcosm of the experience of all the soldiers, especially at the end of that war. So we wanted to make sure that we were historically accurate, first of all, and we took great pains to make sure that happened, but also to put the humanity in it, because my recollections of everything I've read about World War I, there's very little humanity in most of those accounts, and we made sure that was in this documentary.
It's because the numbers are so overwhelming when you think of all the people who were involved. What was the hardest part for you, Nancy?
I don't know that there was a hard part for me. It was a wonderful experience. I mean, everybody should have a passion in life and have somebody want to make a documentary about it, because it's you know, it was just great to have other people interested in my passion. So, you know, the hard part to me is just I still read the letters and I tear up. I still listen to the things that happened and I tear up. It's still a very emotional story, even 100 years later.
Was it tough to get detached enough from the story because of the family connections and the way it had resonated, so that you can tell the story accurately most journalists are trained, obviously, to look at the material from a certain distance, emotional distance. I would think in your case that would have been a little difficult in this case.
Right, and that's the fortunate thing, that I didn't have to be the one actually telling this story. Steve... with the radio documentary.
Right.
Yeah, on the book. And the book is really not so much what I would call a novel. It's more of a compilation of all of the letters and the newspaper accounts, research that I did, finding out why certain things happened. We discovered why he was left off the monument and his name, you know, why his family couldn't find out what happened to him for all those months. So it's, you know, those things, kind of delving into some of that was probably the most difficult of trying to 100 years ago, but it was amazing how much came out. I was just surprised that 100 years later you could find some of that information.
Was that also finding some of that stuff out, was that the most satisfying part of your quest?
I think so, yes, because I had the letters and all of that, but actually running across the rosters of when he was transferred into Division I and finding those things was just pretty amazing.
If by some miracle we could sit Chester and Gertrude down in this studio right now, what question would you ask them? What would you want to most know from them?
Did we get it right? You know, is the story, did we tell the story the way it should have been told, I guess? But they would be so proud, I think. It's just, they would be happy that we care after all these years and that he didn't really die in vain.
We've gotten an email from a listener named William. Again, our email address is nolimits@wfyi.org. William writes, I have been interested in World War I since I was 10 years old. In 1964, Life magazine published a series on the Great War, and Look published a photo essay on the scars of war. 10 years later, while on a 4-H exchange program in the UK, I visited the great battlefield of Verdun. I have become very interested in the war on the home front against German-American culture and the very successful campaign to exterminate the German language here. Evansville was very, very German. Do your guests address this sad home front war? German was spoken on the streets, shops, factories, clubs, churches, and homes of Evansville gone. Indianapolis has the nation's largest World War I memorial, and Evansville created Memorial Stadium. Stan, you want to speak to the historical, the pressures exerted on German Americans at that time?
Evansville was very, very German American. Probably two-thirds or more of the city's population could trace their roots to Germany. In that time there, within a year after the United States went into war, in Evansville, the German newspaper was gone. German was taken out of schools. Churches only pretty much limited their German to funerals for older people like that. I mean, that German culture here, music, other organizations, really disappeared. Things like Bismarck Street, you couldn't have a street named Bismarck. The only thing that really came out of that, and for some reason the county commissioners resisted it, was German Township stayed a name in Vandenberg County. There were many attempts to change that to Gresham there, but it was one of those things there that really the one German thing that survived in Evansville.
We're getting very close on time here, so I'm going to ask this real quickly in about 10 seconds apiece. What do you hope people get out of listening to the audio documentary?
That we have a family, we have their story from World War I, and it is a story that's not been told before.
Nancy?
I think just the personal side of World War I, most of the accounts of World War I are the military accounts, and this one really brings it into a personal level.
Stan.
And I think the thing would be that really we don't pay attention to World War I. It's kind of become a forgotten.
Vienna, Secretary of State. I'm John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producers, Sarah Neal Estes, Roxana Caldwell, and Jill Sheridan. Interactive Media Coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And Board Engineer, Joe Hatcher. Emily Matheny screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.